Have you ever wondered what the top 10 most streamed 90s songs are? Or what about the top 10 highest paid dead celebrities? Hi, I'm Nick, host of the 10-ish podcast, a comedy podcast covering top 10 lists. Every week, me and my various sidekick hosts share trivia, fun facts, and hot takes as we try to guess each other's top 10 list. Here's a little preview.
And it turns out people will just shock a guy to death if someone in a lab coat asks semi-nicely.
Chickens outnumber humans more than 2 to 1.
It is the only R-rated film to gross $1 billion.
With more than 200 episodes and counting, there's sure to be a top 10 list that tickles your weird little fancy just right. Laugh and learn every week with 10-ish podcast, available now on all podcast apps. That's 10-ish podcast.
What's up, rewatchers? It's Dustin here to let you know that this show may feature strong or inappropriate language, so please be mindful of who around you can hear it. Also, we assume that you've at least watched the show or the episode we will be discussing. If not, just be warned that there are spoilers ahead. But really, it's your fault because these shows have been out for a while. Enjoy. And yeah, I mean, I did kind of like toward the end, I was like, I'm tired of taking all these notes. I just started kind of like summarizing the scene. So I'm like, all right, this is what happened. All right. So this is, yeah, I didn't feel like it.
It's but. Our show. So it's however we want.
Exactly. You know what? Sometimes it might be sloppy. Sometimes it might be really well thought out.
Exactly.
You get what you get with us here.
You get everything. It's the human experience.
Woo! Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Rewatch Recap. It's me, Dustin, from Dustin Can Read and Watch, and I'm here with Orlean from Spooky and Strange. How are we doing this week, Orlean?
Toodly-hoo-hi. I don't know.
Toodly-hoo-hi.
I wanted to do like a whoop-de-de-doo, and then I remembered that wasn't a greeting.
I don't know about toodly-hoo-hi either. It is now. It's the new greeting. Toodly-hoo-hi.
It is now.
That almost sounds like you're saying something about tits and hoo-haws.
But I'm not.
Almost, you know.
Or it could be like how you start the game tiddlywinks.
Toodly-hoo-hi. It could be used for anything. It's like the
you
F
just
word.
Say it in public and everyone's like, oh shit, where are the tiddlywinks? I've never played it.
Oh shit, where are they?
Do they where run do off? We wink the tittles? It does sound.
Oh my goodness. Oh, okay. So before we start this episode, I wanted to let you know that Rick Worthy officially followed us on Instagram.
Yo, so, hey Rick. We love you.
Dean Fogg seems to be a fan, so that's a good thing.
That's awesome. Everyone,
so we can add him.
Take note. Okay. Yeah.
Support those who support you. Okay. No.
No, we love him. We've talked about him He's before awesome. On other things before we were even covering The Magicians, I think.
Yeah.
Because he was in that like Vampire Academy trailer.
He's in the Vampire Diaries.
We caught him there.
I think he was Bonnie's dad.
He was.
I mean.
He has been everywhere.
He loves his sci-fi fantasy shows. That's for sure.
He's great at it.
He is really good. He's got a great voice too, though.
He must have a decent sense of humor to be on these shows too.
Mm-hmm. He does. You could if you follow his Instagram and you yeah. see his stories every day. He just seems so lighthearted and fun and just
that's
you know.
Great.
But yeah, we can follow. You can add him to the roster because we also had Devin Gummersall following us from My So-Called Life. So I'm really happy about it. I'm hoping we get more people. That'd be awesome.
Early adopters get in. What do they know about how great we are? Find out.
That's your pitch. There you go. I'm gonna have to make something from that. All right. I wish I could like. You kind of look like you're trying to rap, like.
But I can't rap, so I didn't try.
My name is Orly, and I'm here to say. I always hated that when everybody says I'm here to say. I'm like, oh,
and I'm
stop.
Here everybody to says, say.
Doing drugs is not okay. You know, something.
No, it is okay.
In some regards, yes.
It's It's a gray area, kids.
Yes, it is. Also, so I've also started up my recap rewrites for Ghost Rider. Got through episode one so far.
Classic.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting.
I was an indoor child who liked books.
You were the target audience. I mean,
I loved computers, I loved books, and I loved ghosts.
And mysteries.
So, like, what was I not there for?
And you like neighborhood stuff. You like neighborhood stories.
It made zero sense, but it was cool.
There's a lot of it that doesn't make sense. I'm starting to call that out now. I'm like, oh, yeah, but what about, but this doesn't.
It's a weird haunting, because was the notebook haunted or the computer was haunted or both? Like, Ghost Rider could use both?
Yeah, no, he was just a ghost that could jump into a computer and use it, or jump into a notebook.
Yeah, okay, that's what it was.
Or just take things off the wall and make it move over across the street and spell something. And it was crazy. But only they could see it. So it's like, it's almost like they're hallucinating.
Yeah.
Like a group hallucination. Like, are they all taking drugs? That's like a theory we could come up with.
You know, that applies to an alarming number of, I'm going to say 70s, 80s, and 90s kid shows. Maybe in 2000s, but like I aged out. But we could do a whole side episode on like, is this a real TV show or is this a shared LSD hallucination?
Yeah. Is this the actual plot or are they just on drugs? You know?
Yeah.
Wow. Anyway, so yeah, look for that. It starts on April 29th and it'll be five episodes all through May. So good go. Anyway, so are we ready for this penultimate episode?
I am ready, and great word.
Penultimate. I always like penultimate. I didn't know it for the longest time what it meant, but now I do.
It's a good word.
It is. Season 2, episode 12, Ramifications.
Oh, no. Not those.
No. Previously on, Katie found out about a spellbook located in the Netherlands Library Poison Room, The Art of Killing Gods. Penny met Sylvia, a kid, I guess, working in the library, who says she will help him get to the poison room. The fairies have come to take Finn early, believing Margo is trying to go back on their deal for the royal baby.
Accurate.
And Elliot put Margo into a cell in one of the dungeons for making the deal in the first place, and the fact that she's been too impulsive with all the war and everything.
Yeah, it's just a bit much. House arrest.
Like, you need to chill out. You're grounded. So, next thing you know, Rafe brought Margo a potion to take her to the fairy realm. So she drank it and poof, she was gone.
Seems like a bad idea, girl.
Next thing you know, Elliot gets kicked out of Fillory. He's back in the cottage house randomly, and he knows he got kicked out instantly. We also met Reynard's son, John, a senator with the same power of influence or mind control over humans. And we found out that Reynard hates Our Lady Underground, calling her an evil bitch for leaving him behind. Also, in the underworld, retrieving Julia's shade, they came across a picture of Our Lady Underground and discovered she's actually Persephone, the wife of Hades. And as they're leaving the underworld, shadeless Julia decides to sacrifice her
I don't want to be reminded of that. I'm so mad.
I know, but we have to, because it's the point. She sacrifices her shot of getting her shade back and chooses to bring Alice's shade back with them instead.
Stupid.
Yeah. So now we're at Breakbill South, and Mayakovsky, he's getting interrogated by Quentin and Julia, and he says that no one has ever brought Nathan back to life, and you know that usually they go poof, you know, they get killed. And Quentin, I keep spelling it Quentin.
I love that name. It really is like.
I'm thirsty. Ooh,
there's something about it.
Quench my thirst.
Quenching me. Oh, God.
That's no. Don't do that.
Don't use that soundbite.
Don't do that, please. So Quentin mentions that unlike the others, they have Alice's shade. So there's a difference. Nobody had a shade before. They didn't know where they went, and they finally found out. Mayakovsky still says no. And so Julia says, well, we'll just go to Dean Fogg instead, I'm sure. And then Mayakovsky like gets pissed off at that idea. And he goes, I have morning farts with more magic than Henry Fogg has ever produced in his whole life.
Bitter. Why where does her body come from? Because her shade is not her body, and it's a child representation. So, like, where would Julia's body come from? Because it went, it erupted in magic, right? Like,
I mean, Alice, yeah.
Alice. it burned away in magic, right? So, like, right. Where is the body to put the shade in? Do you have to make, like, a Goliath, but, like, a Gallus?
Or somehow it's just a magical body. I don't know. It's kind of, like, deconstructed. Maybe maybe that's part of the spell. Maybe that's
Gallus,
part of the spell.
Gallus.
Aliot.
Oh, God.
Allium. Because we go alum. So we alum. Alum. Here you go. Anyway. I couldn't get my head out of, like, when he says morning farts. I'm like, ooh, they're alcoholic farts too. And there's a bad.
Ew.
Yeah. Anyway. So he goes on saying that they would need a energy of like 100 mastered magicians. I'm like, damn. And of course, Julia spots one of his magical batteries. And Quentin is like, you know.
I'm sure that's not for anything important. We should use it for our stupid bullshit.
Yeah. Quentin's like, come on. You know, like, how, you know, if it's not good for you, if you're not going to use it, like, use it to do something actually good. Like, bring somebody back.
That's not how batteries work, Quentin, stupid ass. Go to a science class. You don't have to, like, use a battery or else it runs out. That's the opposite.
Yeah. Well, I think you're speaking because of stuff that's coming up. But, Mayakovsky tries to put Quentin in his place, but, like, Quentin actually stands up for himself. And I was like, all right.
In all the wrong times, though. Oh, you beautiful idiot. I love you.
He goes, I got off my ass and went out into the world. And you just sit here and drink. I'm like, that's true.
It's because of what he's done with magic that he sits here and drinks. Yeah, thank God he sits here and drinks now.
Yeah. So he goes, you know, well, Alice even came to break Bell's because she was trying to find out what happened to her brother, Charlie, who ended up burning up as a niffin when he was trying to help Emily Greenstreet, who was trying to, like, get over you, you asshole. So you have a hand in this, and this is your chance to make help right or wrong, basically.
But he's wrong because we should stop using magic on this. It's not working.
I know. Obviously, nothing ever helped. It just kept making more problems.
Right. They're just continuing the cycle.
But I'm still kind of like, well, he stated that is fact. Like, Mayakovsky did something, but he should have gotten involved.
That's not how
the
world works. You don't have to then be part of the solution.
Oh, I know. I'm saying, I know that. I know he doesn't have to, but he is saying, like, the stuff he did with Emily Greenstreet set up a series of things that happened, you know? So it's kind of like, oh.
Quentin arguably got Alice killed. Let's throw that back
That's
in
true
his
too.
Face. Like, you want to play this game, Quentin? Quentin, no, you don't.
Quentin.
Sit down.
Sit down, Quentin. But still, I did like how he was standing up to
him. I appreciate that Quentin is becoming, like, more, he is finding himself.
Being more
but
assertive.
But he still applies it sometimes. You know when you're learning a new skill and sometimes you apply it in the wrong times and the right times and you're learning what that is? That's what Quentin is with, like, himself and his confidence.
Yeah. But he's getting there.
He's growing.
Yeah. He's getting better. He's not as whiny at this point.
Yes.
So next thing we know, they're putting together this Niffin box with these batteries.
Why even have professors? Okay, if the students get their way every fucking time and they do what they do anyway, why even have professors?
Well, you don't, apparently, because, like, Julia fucking recognizes every damn thing they come into contact with. And I'm like, how much do you know, Julia? And you didn't even have the books to know them from.
That's what I mean. Why do we even need professors at Breakville? This is just chaos. It's a circus.
Is she just, like, magical knowledge into her head? Like, I don't know.
Maybe.
Possibly. I don't know.
Maybe in a previous one, she became a Niffin.
I don't know.
That seems likely, right?
It does seem likely, yeah. Anyway, so it turns out Alice's shade is inside Julia at the moment.
She's like,
you know, this is the last time I'll have a shade. And he's like, well, that's not true. So let me tell you, you've been a really good friend. And, you know, she's kind of getting sentimental and stuff, which she wouldn't without a shade. And you're like, you deserve to get Alice back. And so,
I mean, I don't know. Julia deserves to get her fucking shade back and
that's
like
true.
Have a vacation for a week.
Because, yeah, that she got punished for no reason.
That's what I mean. Like, we all deserve stuff in this universe. Okay.
Exactly. We all kind of need, but it ain't happening. So let's just, yeah. Anyway, so he reaches inside her and grabs Alice's shades like a ball of light. And then
yeah,
all of a sudden
it's
not.
Why do people keep like reaching inside Julia?
In her chest. And she's just sitting there like, like, okay, go ahead. And you hear it too. Like it's like her chest cavity is broken open or something. It's all, you know. Ugh. And yeah, so this like ball of light suddenly turns into young Alice. And they get her inside the Niffin box. I'm like, wait, so now, so how did she get a physical body all of a sudden?
None of this is making sense.
Magic. That's all it is. It's magic. So, yeah, she grabs Quentin's fingers. She's like, thank you, before he leaves the cage.
But it's super weird because it's kid her. And so you're like, this is your, like, romantic interest. This isn't just, like, a best friend or something that you're bringing back. This is, like, you're going to fuck, and it's weird, okay?
it's very Jacob and Renesmee.
Yeah, that's what it feels like. It's very much like, no, you leave that little girl alone.
I need to send you a video I found, and it's of, like, Twilight, by the way, and they're like... Yeah. And it's a song that it's these people who they did their makeup and everything to look just like the characters. And did this whole like inappropriate like musical number. And oh my God. Oh, you're having my baby. What a lovely way. I think it's that one.
Okay.
Saying how much you love me. And then later on it goes into Jacob and he goes and he turns the corner to look at the baby. And then he starts singing this really inappropriate like sexual song about the baby.
I mean, what did everybody else see when that look? I've never actually seen the movies. I've just seen, like, the clips and the recaps of the movies, which is enough because I get it. But, like, what did adult people think when that scene happened in front of them? They were just like, oh, yeah, that's how werewolves work.
It's different in the books. Like, it's the same thing that happens, but I guess because it's just described, you kind of understand it more.
Right. You can't capture that. That is an adult man and a baby. Like,
an internal conflict. Unless you're hearing a voiceover, what he's thinking. Yeah.
There is no context that makes that okay. That is an adult man and a baby. And not just any man. It's not just like, oh, that man over there. Look, they bonded. Aw, we'll learn about him and his family. No. No, he wanted to bang your mom, and now he has bonded with the baby. I'm so upset.
Okay, let's go back to this. All right. So, yeah. So, all of a sudden, Flash, they did the spell. Alice is there. Or actually, no, Niffin Alice is there. And, you know, because she's like, I can feel Alice coming. And then poof, she's there. She's wild. She's grunting. She's really pissed off. She doesn't want to be there. She's like, I'm going to burn you alive for this, Quentin.
Buffy?
They start to complete the spell. And the Niffin tells them, don't, please don't, please don't. Right. And then you see them like all of a sudden kind of morphing into each other. The Shade and Niffin bond together. And then another Flash. And then a naked Alice Quinn is back.
Magic. Even though you can't bring people back from the dead. Sure, whatever.
Magician's opening sequence.
Oh, I like that.
That was my jazz hands version.
You need a little snare drum in there with the magician.
We're going to need a backup man at some point. They're just going to be here for that one moment.
Thanks, oh, no. Guys. If we had a band, we would make use of them.
Oh, my God. Everything would be musical. I would be singing the damn review, the recap. That'd be awesome.
That would actually be really funny if we did, like, if we did a musical episode. Oh, I regret it already.
The musical episode is coming up. We could do that musically.
We could.
Oh, we got to figure out ways. Okay, don't hold us to that, guys. But we're going to try. FYI. Oh.
Not a good singer, but you'll listen.
Well, it's okay. We can make it work. There's auto-tune as well. We could do that.
That's
as well.
True. Let's auto-tune the heck out of me. That'll be fun.
We'll do a duet and it'll just be like you all electronic sounding. And we're like, yeah.
And I'm like, yeah.
Lordy. Okay, so we're back and Alice is all naked and she's not talking. And Quentin brings her clothes and she just stares at herself in the mirror and she's like, you know, like holding herself. She just can't believe what she's seeing kind of thing.
I mean, she was dead, right? She was dead.
She was dead. Yeah. She had a consciousness that was out there. Just that was pure magic, but that was
it. But like Alice, quote unquote, Alice was dead.
Yeah. When she didn't have a shade either. So she was, you know, if anybody who should be talking to her would be Julia, I think she would probably be the closest to understanding her at the moment.
That's probably true.
you know, because the shade thing.
I don't think Julia has a lot of spare empathy to go around.
No.
I think she's pretty tired.
Yeah, she's like, I'm pushing myself and I don't even have empathy, okay?
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, I don't think she has the faculties to do that right now.
Mm. Anyway, but the only thing, so Quentin's like, hey, you know, Mayakovsky says you need to eat bland for now. So I thought I'd get you some oatmeal.
Your stomach is brand new. Like Penny's hands. Oh, God.
I know. That's what it was. It's magically new. Everything's magic. And so she just goes, why? And he was like, why do you want oatmeal? Or and she's like, no. And he knew what she meant. And he goes, I couldn't leave you like that. I just couldn't do it. And so Alice just kind of turns around and looks at him and says, fuck you.
Nobody's ever seen Buffy, huh? Nobody's ever watched it in this universe?
There's always consequences. They watched it. They just didn't learn. But whatever.
They didn't understand.
And next on Donuts in Space, we see Sylvia and Penny trying to get into the poison room, but they can't get past the door, of course. But Sylvia's like, oh, there's a back way. Every place has a back way, you know, like, I guess, but.
I don't think that's, yeah, I don't know.
That's not entirely true, but.
Get into like a grain silo one way. There's no back.
Unless I go up the top somehow.
But that's not the back.
That's true. Well, I mean, it's the closest to the back.
The top is arguably the entrance.
Then the bottom would be the back, wouldn't it? I don't know. I'm just trying to, anyway. This is a dumb thing to argue about. All right, let's keep going. So she like overheard librarians talking about the water fountains and whatnot. And she said the one for the poison room has like books on it or something.
Guys, because you're not supposed to go through it. Something bad is going to happen.
I know. And like, she's like, if we split up, we could find it in a few weeks. And Penny's like, fuck that. I'm a traveler. I'll get it in a few hours.
You can't just go into the poison room. We assume... Okay,
it's full of poison.
Like, not just that the books are like mental poison, but it's full of poison. Sealed.
You would assume like poison would be like poisonous plants or just, you know, drugs or whatever.
Yeah, like and it wouldn't be safe to just go in there.
I'm thinking magic and I'm thinking poison. I'm thinking it's coming from a poisonous plant somehow, right?
Sure.
So I'm thinking there's probably poisonous plants. And I'm like, if they're out there, then there's going to be like spores or something.
That's what I'm thinking. It's in the air. There's something in the air that makes so it like you can't be in there.
And they call the whole room is poison. It's literally called the poison room.
I think it is full of poison. And like, maybe we are.
Do a little more research about this room first, you know, just a little more. But find out more. Whatever. They're not going to listen to me because they didn't hear it.
No. Penny agreed to rob a bank. So why would he be more careful about this?
I mean, why not? You know, balls to the wall, I guess they say. Is that a...
Who says that? Is
that a sexual thing? You never heard balls to the wall?
I mean, I have, but like only in songs.
I don't know what it means.
I've never heard anyone say like, let's go balls to the wall.
But I'm like, is that like a sex, is that like a gendered thing? Or does that mean like a literal ball?
I assume it's about basketball.
I guess. So like handball or something?
Am I crazy?
If you know people, let us know the etymology of that term. I would like to know.
I looked it up. It means an all-out effort coming from the world of aviation. On an airplane, the handles controlling the throttle and the fuel mixture are often topped with ball-shaped grips, referred to as to the pilots as balls, so balls to the wall.
Oh, wow.
I never
totally not where
that.
I thought that was coming from.
I never would have guessed that, but it says it multiple times.
Wow. All right, guys, we just crinkled your brain a little more. So,
first attested in the 1960s. That's the etymology. Analogous to pedal to the metal, but it's the airplane one. Oh my God. Never knew that.
That's so funny. That is so funny. I like that. I kind of like it more now, you know?
So it's now, not vulgar at all.
Car, if you want to like go really fast in your car, balls to the wall, because technically.
But you have pedals to the metal, which is
the car
one.
I know, but you could
one.
Say that in the air if you wanted to, because technically
you could.
It means
you
the same
could.
Thing.
But yeah, it's nothing sexed or gendered.
Yeah.
So you can say it.
Hey, it's free, everybody. Do that one. Wow. Okay. So, yeah, she's like, he's like, I'm going to go, you know, do that and be a sexy beast and travel and find the thing. And we go back to Breakbill South, and Elliot shows up and tells Quentin, hey, I got banished from Fillory, and asks if Ember and Umber, like, didn't they do all this to the Chatwins all the time? And Quentin's like, yeah, when their adventure was done. And Elliot's like, but no, I don't understand, because my adventure just began, so I don't understand, you know.
They don't like gay stuff.
They're tired of it. I mean, look at, I mean, Martin Chatwin. They didn't want him in there because all the gay stuff that happened to him. It was, you know,
molested. That wasn't gay. Elliot's trying to marry a gay man. I said that was gay.
Okay.
That's why it's funny. Don't try to make it about child abuse. I just made a fun gay joke.
I made a fun gay joke and you turned it into child abuse and molestation. Okay.
We are in moods we're today. In deep.
Wow. Are we both stoned? Okay.
No, I could be more stoned.
I should be. Yeah. So he says, our adventure just began. He goes, Quentin, give me the button so I can go. And Quentin's like, I bargained it off to a dragon for access to the underworld.
About that.
And Elliot's like, why would you do that? And then all of a sudden, a very much alive Alice walks by answering his question. Like, how weird would that be? All of a sudden, that girl you thought was dead.
I just don't think that's a fair trade for the button. And I say that not hating Alice. I'm just like, the button is like so powerful. And I know you can get another one, but like, you would just be like, oh, okay, I'm going to come to grips with that decision you made, Quentin. Okay. Right? Like, you just have a little like, okay.
I need a moment. Thanks. Yeah. I'm a little pissed. So after a commercial break, we're back in Fillory, and Tick, Benedict, and Rafe all crowd around Josh, stating, like, since all the royals are freaking, they vacated Fillory, and you're the only child of Earth here, you're technically the High King now. And, you know, I'm like, oh, what? I instantly go, God, no, not Josh. Josh doesn't need to be king.
Josh can't really handle things. Yeah.
Yeah. He decides to forego the Knight of Crowns ceremony off the Rainbow Bridge and takes royal matters now. He puts the crown on and he's like, half the court are still rats. The talking beavers are in revolt. They require dental coverage. And the measly mountains have disappeared. And Rafe yells, stop! Just as Josh is about to sit down on the thrones because they're cursed.
Oh, yeah. But Josh already seems to have been paying more attention than everybody else.
Yeah. Just well, saying. You know.
I mean, I think he's a fellow Fillory book nerd too in the group.
Yeah, he's just more like weed focused.
he's trying to use magic to get fucked up. That's what he's using it for,
like, kind of almost harmless purposes, you know,
recreation.
Recreation, which I think is fine. So yeah, he's like, yeah, the thrones are cursed, and Josh is like, all right, what's not fucked here, okay? And Tick's like, well, maybe this is all too much for you. You're new. And Josh is like, let me tell you about this king on Earth and his philosophy. Hakuna Matata. It means no worries. I'm sorry.
They don't have food. They're like at war. Their queen has been kidnapped.
Hakuna Matata. So he tells Benedict, you know, you deal with those missing mountains. Just erase them off the map. And Benedict's, what? And so they're like, he goes, all right, we're going to talk with the rats. We're going to bring in some talking rats and we're going to get them to translate the rat royal court. And then all the beavers, they're going to get braces because damn it, they deserve it. And then he turns over to Tick. He goes, say it. And Tick's like, Hakuna Matata. It's so ridiculous. I love it. And next is like this good like hip hop weed montage, and Josh is getting them all stoned, and they're dancing around,
it's really
destroying,
fun. Yeah,
destroying the thrones. They're setting them on fire, and Josh like signs random decrees.
I love it.
And later he has another throne set up with this like huge like twisty bong next to it, and Benedict's over here just eating grapes like there's no tomorrow, and Rafe is like roasting a pig on a spigot in the middle of the room. That's my king.
Honestly, this is probably what the Fillorians wanted more of all along.
I mean, fun times.
Yeah, some actual fun, not like this shitty champagne Elliot's trying to get them to make.
Like, Elliot, we need certain things that we don't have in Fillory to do this. Come on, man.
But also, it would help if everybody got high.
It would. That's just a good policy. Chill out.
We go to the cottage house and Katie enters and sees Julia and starts to just book it upstairs. And Julia's like, hey, look, I'm sorry. Look, I had my shade for a minute, but it's gone again. And, you know, I've been in a lot of trouble, blah, blah, blah. And Katie's like, uh-huh, what do you want? And Julia's like, well, I mean, I want you to be that missing piece of me to tell me when to hit the brakes. And Katie, she kind of reluctantly agrees because she's like, all right, I kind of need your help anyway, really.
Katie can't help. Katie is a caretaker, but everybody she tries to take care of is so fucked in the head.
I know. She wants to fix. It's because of her upbringing, because her mom is so messed up.
She wants to help and fix.
She wants to fix everybody if she can. Which, you know, it's noble, but at the same time, it screws you.
It's, right. It's not like she's doing anything wrong. These are just wrong people.
Exactly. Precisely. So she brings out John, who's hiding from Reynard at Breakbills, and says that, you know, Reynard is obsessed with Our Lady Underground, and he's like, got mad about it, you know? And so Julia's like, well, guess who Our Lady Underground is? It's freaking Persephone! And they decide to lure Reynard out and teach John some magic so that he can take out his dad. I mean, it's a good plan in theory.
Seems like a, I don't trust this variable in your plan. But I know, also,
and he's so like
do-gooder.
He's kind of a wet rag. He's kind of, you know what I mean? Like, it just feels like
I don't think they should rely on him.
Wishy-washy. You know what I mean? Like,
I agree. And I don't think he's been exposed enough to this world to be ready to kill somebody.
No.
I just don't think he's there. They need to be ready to do it. But also, I have a question because I can't remember this. Have we learned yet? Is Our Lady Underground his mother or his ex-lover?
We learn at the end of this episode.
Okay, because I remember being like, what is it? And I couldn't. Okay, so we don't know yet during this. Right. I got it.
So, yeah, we learn that at the end of the episode.
Okay.
Okay, back to Breakbill South. Over drinks, Elliot tells a worried Quentin that Alice is okay, just to follow Mayakovsky's orders, stay away from her for a few days. And then Elliot's like, hey, Quentin, let's figure out this filler thing. We don't have a button anymore. But you said the dragon said something about another door or something. And he said, yeah, the first portal is still open. And they start to go through like, okay, how did they get to the fillery in the books? And Quentin's like, wait, the first portal the Chatwins used was through that clock. And it's the one on the cover. And I think I saw that clock before my Yale interview when we found that guy dead. And I'm like, going all the way back to episode one. What?
This is the craziest, unbelievable jump in like maybe any episode of The Magicians. Let me just put that out there. Because I was like
figuring it out, or
this would take you 6 fucking months to figure out. Shut the fuck up, you guys. They figure it out so fast.
He forgot all about this clock this entire time. Never thought about this whole thing and just thinking about the clock. He's been looking at this. He's still rereading the books. I know he is. So like, you know, that illustration is like, you never got reminded that you saw this clock like really until now.
Yeah, I don't buy it. But anyway.
Convenient. Whatever. Back at Fillory, Margo shows up looking all transparent and she's like, Josh, why the fuck are you taking a nap and you should be looking for me? And you need to get me back to Fillory. And she tells him like, I'm stuck in the fairy realm. And he's like, oh, whoops. I smoked the Sea of the Worlds weed.
I, by the way, love all his different weeds. Would love to try them. That's,
I want to see them more in action. Delightful. Too, you know? And she says she's going to find Finn. And he's, you know, you need to find a way to get me back. So that she runs, walks off. And we go back to the Netherlands. And Penny and Sylvia have found the poison room fountain, but it's under a huge, like, metal plates. And it's a big
no,
lock.
I'm shocked.
Yeah. But this is the thing that makes, okay, Sylvia's like, oh, it's, you know, they've locked it with this magical, I think I can crack it. And then she does it with like such ease. It seems way too easy. And
this entire episode comes together in a way that's like, I understand it's the end and we need to get everybody in the places that we want to get them, but it's a little too convenient.
Yeah. I'm like, why does this girl? Yeah.
Who is she? Right. What is she? Does she run the library?
She keeps talking about her dad. It was important or something.
Who is she?
And
I need so much more information.
Penny's like, what happened with your dad? What are you doing? You're going to a lot of trouble for all this dangerous
Let's
magic.
Let's answer some questions.
It doesn't make any sense. No. I'm like, thank you. Please ask these questions. But you're doing it a little late, but still ask the questions. And she says, you know, I have my own thing. I'm not doing everything because of a man. You know, I'm not, it's not that typical because of my dad or anybody else. And I'm looking for my own book. And because all the librarian's books are locked up in the poison room. And
she, so is she says, a librarian? Like before she was like this. Is she a shade? Is that why she's a child? I have so many questions.
I know. Is she dead? Is she not aging? What's going on? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And she says since she's been at the library, she's been bored. And she like she read Kanye's book. And she says that he's really misunderstood. I'm like, no, he's not. But I digress. And
she only read the book in like 2016 or something, right?
Yeah.
She missed a lot.
Yeah. There was a lot she didn't get to. She discovered that his book ended randomly in 20 pages. Like it just went blank pages at the last 20. It just stopped in the middle of a sex scene. That's what she said. And then she kept checking on people's books and they all end with 20 blank pages. And it's apparently been happening for a while and the order knows everything about it and that something cataclysmic is coming soon, in like weeks.
But like, okay, yeah. It just invites so many questions.
I'm like, how do they know all this? Like, what? I want to know more, you know? And Penny says, well, I'll grab your book for you. He's getting ready to jump in the, you know, the thing. Because he can only come back by on his own. You'd need a button to get back through the fountain the other way. And she says, well, I'm coming too. And she ties a rope to her waist and into a statue or something and jumps in. Like, she goes, it's not my first time I've done this.
Is poison bouncy? Like, can you float in I don't know what's going on. You know what I mean? Because, like, how would, I know it's to get back through, but you're just going to hang, right? Like,
yeah.
Like, you're just going to hang in gravity. Long enough. Right. You would, I don't.
How? Okay. So she ties the rope. The rope didn't look like, she would just, like, go and stop in one spot.
That's what I mean. How would you get back? Because there's not water on the other side. Like, you're just going into a room. And so if the air isn't, like.
And I thought you just kind of pop and you're in the room. And not
no,
just
you like fall through a ceiling.
Yeah. I think people's legs would be broken all the time from that happening.
I think so too, actually. I think it would be even more dangerous than it seems. And it is already like dangerous.
And diving head first. Ooh, don't do that. Anyway.
Oh, yeah. How would.
A lot of it's not making sense. I need to know the physics of it all. And,
just
you know,
push
apparently
through.
Magic is physics. So I don't know.
Push through.
Anyway, we need some like Sheldon Cooper or somebody to like show up and tell us about it. Big Bang Theory. Anyway, Washington, D.C. John finds Reynard in his office and says, you know, I need to talk to you about some stuff. And Reynard's like, well, you know what? I realized I've missed a lot of your birthdays. Here's a gift. And so John opens this little box and he finds his wife's ear. Oh, God. I was like, looking at it at first, like, what is that? I couldn't tell. It was so bloody.
Yeah.
But he's, of course, devastated. And Reynard knows, like, I know you went back to the witches, a.k.a. Break Bills. And John just like, what happened to my wife? Where is she? I'm like, you don't want to know, John. Like,
he's
you found
so
her ear.
Out of his depth. He has no idea.
I'm like, you don't understand who you're dealing with.
When you're handed an ear, it's because that's probably all that's left.
Yeah.
That's generally
and that's
what
pretty
the message
much what Reynard,
means.
Reynard says. He's like, yeah, this is part of her. This is whatever I can find, you know. And so he says he's like determined to make John see his potential. And he brags about like, I put this black spot on Julia's soul and she scrubbed at it and made it bigger. And now she can never go back to who she was. I'm like, what a bastard.
Yeah. I mean, this is, Julia didn't do anything to you.
Yeah. And he's like, he's so proud about it.
Right.
And he puts the box with John's wife's ear into John's jacket pocket and says, this is an investment into who you are. Someday you will come and find me.
I mean, yeah, you don't want to be on any side of a serial killer, including, like, their protege.
No. No. That's a weird family business. I don't know if I like that. It's kind of strange. So now we're somewhere in Vancouver, and Quentin and Elliot show up at a house. It's kind of a cabin, kind of like a see-through cabin. Anyway. And yeah, one thing I've noticed, by the way, a lot of these houses that supernatural people live in, they're all like glass houses. You ever notice that? Like you can see right through them most of the time. Like,
no, yeah.
Twilight, they have a house like that. The Cullens have one. This guy has one. There's another
that
one.
Is that is weird. I think it's meant to show like a connection to nature, but it is weird.
A connection to nature, maybe that, hey, I have nothing to hide, but they're still hiding at the same time. You know what I mean? Like, I open out in the open, hiding out in the open in a way.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's what it is. Anyway. So yeah, they tell the guy that answers the door, who's really kind of cute, actually, that they're looking for a clock and it was their grandfather's, and they bribed someone at the auction house website and found out that he had purchased it. And the man's like, I don't know what you're talking about. And then Quentin looks past him and sees like a Fillory and Further poster on the wall. And he just starts to like recite a quote from the book about the clock. And the guy's like, oh, that's my favorite chapter. And he's like, oh, come in. Like he's being turned on by this. He's like, so. And so they walk in. He has a ton of collectibles from Fillory and Further. And like Elliot tries to pick up something. And I'm like, you don't just touch somebody's. It's clearly displayed.
Yeah, you wouldn't just pick stuff up.
It's not like a magazine sitting there and you picked it up. That's different.
Somebody has some king britches he's getting a little too big for. Huh?
Exactly. Oh, I can touch things. Whatever. Really? Should you? I don't think so. So, yeah. Bad form, Elliot. And Quentin spots the script for Fillory and Further the movie from 1983 that was never made because the director got mad that the producers wouldn't pay for talking bears.
I would geek out so hard about something like that, too.
And I'm like, they canceled the entire movie. They didn't just get a new director. Like, I don't understand. They just kind of gave up, I guess. I mean, but he lets Quentin look through the script. And, you know, of course, he's like, oh, my God, they made the British Chatwin children into skateboarding Americans. And that makes me mad, too, because I hate when they do stupid shit like that.
Like the Artemis Fowl movie that I'll never watch. I'd rather die.
I watched it. And
why do you hate yourself like this?
I didn't know. It was when it first came out.
I knew from the trailer. That trailer was trash.
Well, I knew that it was going to be a mashup of a bunch of different things, probably from different books.
Oh, for sure. But I mean, that was not Artemis Fowl. That was not Butler. That was not anybody.
Yeah,
I reject it.
They had some things right, but then other things I was like, what about? Because I'd read it recently before that. So anyway. So, yeah, he's looking through that, and Elliot is over here, and he says, hey, I found Grampy's clock. And I just think it's so funny, called him Grampy. Who says that? I've never heard anybody say Grampy. And, and so, meanwhile, the guy's like, yeah, about the skateboarding Americans. And he goes, and it also adds, he goes, yeah, they got Jane wrong, because a girl that timid would never grow up to be the Watcher Woman. And then Elliot's over here going, I'll buy the clock for $1,000. The guy's like, no. And he's like, 20,000? He's like, no. And then Quentin's like, wait a minute. The books never said who the Watcher Woman was. Uh-oh. And the guy's trying to like recover from that. And he's like, oh, it wasn't hard to deduce. You know, I mean, she's wearing a hood and that's never, it's usually somebody that you've seen before. And Quentin's like, BS. You know the truth about Filler. You've probably been there. And so, like, Elliot does that little tut thing where he looks through, like, the square, and he goes, oh, Quentin, this guy's got horns. And then the guy's like, ugh, and he snaps his fingers, and boom, he's been standing in front of Umber, the other ram god of Fillory, this entire time.
Womp, womp.
And we go into the cottage house again, and Julia tells Katie more about Persephone, and they need to make like plans to like, we'll make some storms to make it look like she's back, like the way she used to arrive places back in the day during her, you know, every time she came in for spring and left.
Where did she go?
No one knows.
We still don't know, right? She just disappeared.
No idea. She just went away. And so they want to do that to lure Reynard out. And so just then John enters. He's all upset. He's like, I need a drink. And Julie goes like, hey, he goes to talk to him. And he's like, he's talking about how Reynard tries to break you until there's no coming back. And he says, you know, whatever happens, don't let him. She says this. Did she say that? Whatever happens, don't let him be right. Oh, that's what it was. No, he says it to her.
Okay. Yeah.
Don't let them be right that it breaks you and you can't come back from it. You know, you can do the right thing kind of thing. And then he turns to Julia and he uses that little whammy on her and tells her, you know, go get some pizza. Mm-hmm. And she instantly just gets up and leaves and walks out the door. And you're like, what's going on? That's weird. Why would you do that? And then he goes over to Katie and he's like, look, there's no time to discuss this. I'm sorry. And he starts to like get into her head and she's got all these wards on her mind. And so it's giving her all this pain. She's like, why are you doing this to me? And he says, like, I can't do it to Julia because after she's been through a lot and I can't do more bad shit to her.
Katie has been through so much.
I know. I'm like, I mean, he's trying to be a good guy on Julia's behalf, but he doesn't know shit about Katie.
He's still taking someone's autonomy. Like, he's not a good person, but he doesn't know that he so easily uses people. Like, he's mm-hmm. only just started to understand.
Yeah, and still, like, he's trying to do it. Well, we know why he's doing it. He's doing it from a point of self-sacrifice in this regard. So, in a way,
he
he's doing good.
He thinks that he is the only one who's taking on, like, the harm.
Yeah.
That's what he's thinking.
That this won't leave a mark. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we jump over to Brackville South real quick, and Mayakovsky tries to tell, he's like trying to give Alice tea, and he's like, wow, he's looking at all the magic she's writing out, and he's like, wow, this is awesome. She's like, I'm busy. Leave me alone. I'm busy. Leave me alone. Like, and she says, I used to know all this shit about magic, and now it's fading away like a dream. And she's trying to get as much down as she can before it's all gone. And she's pissed that she can't do magic now. And Mayakovsky's like, you're like a newborn. You got to learn it all again. I'm like, I don't understand that. Or grow it, maybe? Grow that magic.
No, she never learned magic. Like, that's basically the body that she's in. So, she might have these, like, after effects of the understanding. But she, her body, her hands, her brain have never learned magic. And so I think that's what's going on. But
there's like the vague familiarity of everybody she's known, but that's it.
Yes.
Like, she's a completely new person.
She doesn't know. All the knowledge she acquired is gone.
This is basically Alice 41.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good way to think about it.
Yeah.
Also, this scene made me think, like, Alice loves magic and knowledge more than she loves Quentin. Like, I don't think if the opposite had happened, I think Alice would have taken on the mission of, like, learning the most magic in the world and being the most powerful magician ever. But mm-hmm. I don't think she would have gone to the depths of the earth to rescue Quentin and bring him back. I'm not saying
not
it
this
big.
Alice. Yeah.
Right. I just don't. I think she's so dedicated to the search for knowledge and, like, the thirst for it.
Yeah. And he says that her Niffin life had no meaning because she knew everything. She already knew everything, and
right.
you know, and she had no, she didn't care about anything at the same time. And he says that humans, she says that humans are weak pieces of shit. And he says, do you know what magic is? I have to do the voice. Energy capable of making the shithole world one fraction of a speck less unbearable because we shits try so fucking hard, and that is not weakness. And I agree with that.
I love how the show slowly exposes, like, everybody's different viewpoint on magic. Because there's mm-hmm. no, like, one answer.
And, yeah, and what it means to be human and all that mm-hmm. stuff, yeah. He tells her, if you don't like this world, that's good because you see its faults and it gives you focus and solitude to fix it.
It's true.
Also true. Like, that's...
You don't just want to sit outside of the world.
You want to involve yourself somehow, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then he gives her, like, a big bottle of Adderall. And he's like, it'll help you write like Tolstoy. And and she gives him this look and he says, don't make face. Drugs are fun.
Like we said.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like I'm like the Count from Sesame Street's cousin.
I mean, you're still in the Mayakovsky. I'll let you know if it's getting too, like,
Yeah. Okay. Back at the cottage house, Julie returns with the pizza. And she finds Katie covered in blood, and essentially Katie's like, yeah, he made me do it. He made me kill him to get his power.
Damn it, John.
And so she got his power, and Julie's like, all right, okay, all right. Good thing. This is the time where not having a shade is good because she doesn't panic. She doesn't have that emotion to it.
Poor
she's like,
Katie.
All right. And she's like, all right, go get yourself cleaned up. I'm going to handle the rest. Don't worry. Katie. And I'm like, I'm glad that was, you know. So... Which I'm surprised, since she said that, we didn't get a shot of Katie in the shower in a ball, like with the blood running off
her. I know,
but I'm
so glad this wasn't, like, exploitative, because some of the shots have kind of been, and I'm glad we're maybe getting away from that.
Yeah, well, at least of the women. I want to see some men butts. That's just what I want. So, yeah, we jump back to the poison room, and Penny, he's in the poison room, and... So he's looking for the God killing book mm-hmm. and he finds it and he notices his arm has like developed this like horrible rash.
Like poison.
Like poison. And he runs. He's like, oh my God, Sylvia, we got to go. And she looks up. She's got the rash all over her face. I'm like, it's very zombie looking.
What did you think meant the poison room?
I mean, the damn place looks like fucking Silent Hill.
Right. What do you think the poison room is going to do to you?
Kind of looks like the upside down, too. And it is strictly
black and white.
It
does look like the upside down. It does look like the upside down. Yeah. That's.
I do like how it is strictly black and white. Like, it's funny because, like, okay, so the non-magical areas are grayscale. And then you go to the Netherlands, which is a little bit darker grayscale. Like, it's more gray. Mm-hmm. And then you go to this room, and it's completely black and white.
Mm.
It was very interesting, but it's not supposed to be a magical room, but I'm like, but it's bad. So I'm trying to figure out what their color scheme.
Well, like, have ideas we seen were, a bad represent. Magical place yet? Or is this a first one?
The first one so far that I know, well, that's been black and white like this. Yeah.
Well, I think it's the first, like, actually quote unquote bad magical place we've seen.
Right.
As opposed to like a neutral
or with
place.
Bad magic. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm. I don't know. Give us your theories. I want to know what you think about these, mm-hmm. the color tones for the different areas and what you think they all mean. And, you know, does it mean no magic? Does it mean just not fantastical? Does it mean, what does it mean? What do you think it does? Let us know. Give us some comments. Let us know. Anyway, so we go back to Umber's house, and Umber tells them how he made a deal with Martin Chatwin to fake his death so that Martin wouldn't kill him. And so that's where he escaped to Vancouver because, I mean, Canada is obviously second choice to Fillory, right? So, you mean, what do you, you know?
Is it? Also, fucking Martin.
Still has his hand in everything. Still. Constantly. Anyway, he asks them what they enjoy about Fillory. And Q says it reminds him of a time before he knew how shitty being an adult is.
Like, so nothing about actual Fillory.
Yeah, it's all about your
it's about his memories, perception of nostalgia. It, but like, it's not the real Fillory, as we've seen.
Yeah, he still doesn't see it, apparently.
Yeah.
And Elliot says, because there's a lot of opium in the air.
That honestly would be my reason, too. That sounds great.
I want to go there just to feel that what that feels like.
I would love to microdose opium through the air. That just sounds really nice.
There are probably no like stress related diseases or problems, you know, or disorders going on. The stomach disorder. I get stomach stuff when I get stressed out. It probably would go
away.
Yeah,
but you get wrinkles because you're like, I smiled too much.
Umber asks how they, you know, how do you feel about turtles? And they're both kind of indifferent, really. And he's like, well, how would you feel if you knew your entire world rested on the back of one or several turtles? Which, I mean, this is a thing in the books.
It is.
There's a big turtle head at one point. Yeah, and
it's also a Terry Pratchett thing.
Yeah. And there's a lot of things. Actually, and Stephen King's it. There's a turtle that the world, you know, and the universe and all this stuff that I know about. Somebody told me about it. I hadn't read it, but. Yeah, there's a whole quote and he goes, it's turtles all the way down. That's in the book. So Quentin wants to know why he's asking this question. And Umber's like, well, you're kind of like a focus study because you've been to my previous work, you know, Fillory. He says, and he grabs a little like snow globe.
So weird. Yeah, it gets so weird.
With like, he has a cube in it. It's got these metal sides. He's like, this is my new pocket world. I call it Cuba.
It's awful.
And Elliot's like, there's already a place that exists named that. And he's like, really? He's like, yeah. And he's like, are you sure? He's yeah. And he's like, oh, damn. How do you not know this? You're a god. Like, I don't, anyway.
He's not a god of Earth.
That's true. But if he knows about Vancouver, I mean, well, so Elliot tells him, hurry up. Like, come on. We have a kingdom to fix. And Umber starts laughing because Earth children were never meant to fix Fillory. Just entertain like a reality TV star.
I knew it. It's that Chandler like, I knew it.
Yeah, yeah. And he says that Umber must have found you so boring, hence why you were kicked out. And Elliot, of course, is not happy about being called boring. And Umber says that Fillory is made out of opposites. Like, Ember is about entropy and chaos, and Quentin points out, and he goes, and as Quentin points out, he's like, and we can see it on the background of the screen, Umber has every season of Law and Order on DVD.
He is so boring.
Like, he goes, it's the perfect show. And can we see into the future? Because I forgot all about this. And it's a, like a throwback to our little Law and Order montage.
Oh, I didn't even know this. I didn't remember this at all.
Yeah. And I was like, oh my God, it ties together. So he said, like, when I lived in Fillory, there was balance, but with only Ember, chaos reigns, and you should just give up. We go back to the poison room, and Sylvia's like, hey, you need to leave me. I found my book, and it wasn't a blank spot there. I die here. This is where I die.
What the Penny, fuck?
And this is, okay, this brings up a question. So then Penny, he's like, she says, and if you try to take me back, you'll die too. And I'm like, so you need to go on your own. But I'm confused. Her book says that she dies. Did it say that Penny dies? Or does it give her an alternative if anybody makes a different move? I don't, like, how does the
We don't know. Read? It's a mystery. I mean, it might just say, like, and Penny got out with a second to spare as she died. You know what I mean? Like, it could be anything.
Yeah. If you stay, yeah, that could mean that. That's like, true.
So it, like, it doesn't even have to be that, like, directive. Oh, my God. If the books are choose your own adventure, that would be... Well, Penny's has to be because he has timelines.
He has multiple timelines.
So
right.
His must be like, I don't know, man. They're both idiots right now.
But if you know what the thing is, like, oh, I saw them reshelve your book 39 times. I'm like, but everybody else was rebooted too. Like everybody else in the world, if you think about it.
I don't think they were. I think that is what is different about this little pocket experiment they were going through. I don't think the rest of the world was in it. Like, I think Quentin has one dad who has experienced life one time.
Okay. And they just keep getting pulled out.
They are in, like, a pocket dimension kind of thing that they get pulled in. I can't. That's my theory. Yeah.
And then it kind of created alternate.
And that's why there's 39 fogs, even though he wasn't, like, one of. You know what I mean?
They gave him the consciousness of it.
Within the bubble, there had to be, like, 39. Eliza's.
It's so confused. It's so messed up. Very,
once you start to get into time stuff, it's not clear.
Yeah, it never is for anything. You're just like, wait, that doesn't make sense. But anyway.
Like, does like, for example, Ember and Umber are not, like, ultimate gods. They don't even know about all the time loop stuff, probably. They only know what they saw directly or, like, observed, right?
Or maybe they're not, know, like, about it, but they didn't actually.
They're not omnipotent gods.
I would say, but Martin knew.
Yeah, but that's because he was in, like, direct battle with Eliza and she was doing it, right? Like, she did it because.
Or maybe, like, a family connection.
He kept killing her, or, like, he killed her and she did it.
Or maybe she actually, because of the family connection, she cared about him and wanted, you know, somehow.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, I think Ember and Umber are, like, gods of Fillory. But in the galactic scheme of things, that means almost nothing. Yeah. That's my theory.
Kind of like, yeah, I get what you're saying. Kind of like Reynard is to Fillory. He doesn't give a shit.
Well, and like, because they're saying Persephone is real. She would be like a goddess of Earth.
Right.
Right?
Because that's one of our gods.
Right. That's what I'm thinking.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. It'd be like, you know, everybody worshiping Aslan here. That wouldn't happen.
Right. That's what I'm thinking. It's like, yeah.
So, okay, so we jump over to the cottage house, and Katie's getting a drink, and Penny pops up behind her. He's like, here's your book. And then he just falls out, passed out on the ground, and Katie's
poisoned.
Like, help, I need help. We go back over to Fillory, and Rafe tries to, like, Josh, here, take this potion, go to the fairy realm. But Josh is like, no, how am I going to get back? And they're like, And just then, Prince S shows up, like, where's my king? Where's my dad? And Josh is like, he tries to, like, pass it off as, like, kind of like a funny minor problem. And he's like, funny story. Your dad is a rat person now.
Hakuna Matata.
Yeah. And S is like, nope, do it. And then, like, this, his magician is behind an invisibility cloak and, like wing, like, flings his freaking wand at them and, like, cuts off the guards' heads with his wand. And now, like, covered in blood, Josh and the advisors are, like, running. They run, and they run into some room, and they lock a door, and the Lorians are trying to break it down, and Josh laments, Hakuna Matata has failed me.
Shocking. Also, Margo and Prince S together would destroy all of Fillory in short order because they'd be so hot-headed together.
Oh, my God.
It would be so awful.
Thank God. So after commercial break, we're at Umber's house again, and Umber's like, I'm not going back to Fillory. And Quentin's like, you're gonna let Ember just turn it into a telenovela? And Umber says, like, Ember pitted the animals against each other and only gave the sexy ones the ability to speak.
Good Lord.
I mean, I get it's not actually bestiality because it's a ram god.
They have knowledge and consciousness. Yeah. And yeah.
And but it's still weird. And it makes me wonder, like, what does he consider a sexy animal? You know, like, sexy? Really?
Yeah,
anyway.
That's a good point.
He mentions when Ember talked to them about turning humans into rats, and it looks like he did. And Umber's like, oh, that's been on his bucket list for years. And then they get another, like, there's another moment with Quentin coming up doing his assertive thing. And it's like two in this episode alone. That's like, oh, it's too much. We can't, too much of this Quentin. And Quentin's like, he kind of reasoned the riot act. You're like, you are a god of Fillory. You let the beast happen. You shut out a child that needed shelter. And when he became a monster, you ran.
Yeah, I have no criticism of this one.
This is totally true, though.
Go, Quentin.
And then he says, you hate chaos? Then fix the fucking chaos you created.
Yeah.
True. Truth. When, you know what? You're allowed to say this to a god who's
omnipotent. I agree. Again, no notes. Go, Quentin.
And this Quentin is sexy. This Quentin is a sexy Quentin. Direct, authoritative, no bumbling. He speaks clearly, concise, you know. His hair's still greasy looking, but...
taking up space.
Yeah, we'd still jump his bones. So Umber tells him he's right, but some mistakes can't be repaired, and I will avoid those in my new world. And Elliot's like, please, just give us the clock then. Just give us the clock. And Umber's like, why do you want it? And Elliot says, I'm like, I'm not ready to walk away. And we know you still love Fillory because you have all these freaking mementos of it.
Yeah, why would you be surrounded by it like this?
And he's like, if you're not going to save it, at least let us try to, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Umber says, fine, the clock is yours, but heed my warning. And this never is good for a god to say to you. He says, nothing entertains Ember more than a whimsical death.
That does not bode well for any of our heroes.
Very foreshadow filling, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, I didn't pay attention really at the beginning, but when I really looked at his eyes, he had those, like, Kermit the Frog goat pupils.
He has goat's eyes, yeah.
And I was, it was freaky looking when you really looked at him.
Not hot. Sorry. I mean, it's a little bit like Beauty and the Beast kind of thing going on.
Yeah.
It's opposite.
He's a little hotter than the beast.
Well, I'm just saying the beast is not hot, but the human beast is even less hot. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. I get what you're saying. Yeah. It's like, you're cuter when you were
if I had a nice, soft, gentle beast guy.
But now you're this guy and you're so blah.
You're so pretty.
You're too pretty. Like, have some
flaws. That's what Child Me said at the end of Beauty and the Beast. Yeah. Oh, he's so pretty.
He's like, no thanks. Aww. So we go back to the cottage house, and Julia sees, like, he uses the spell book that Penny brought to make the god-killing bullet from John's energy. And Katie comes into the room and says that Penny's isolated in the infirmary because of, like, some magical radiation or something, maybe.
Poison!
Julia tells her it's kill time by plotting. Wait. What the hell?
Good use of words?
Oh, sorry. I completely. Not it's kill time. Let's kill time.
Oh, okay.
I was like, wait, what did that say? Julia says, let's kill time by plotting Reynard's demise. And then she, like, you know, here's the bullet I made. So we have one shot. It used all of John's energy. And I hate these odds. It never ends well. And we go back to Fillory as the Lorians axe their way into the door. Like, all this smoke comes out and it just hits all of them in the face. It's like, it goes right up into their face and they all get stoned and passed out. And then we see the advisors and Josh, like, leaving with the rags covering their mouth. And Josh accidentally inhales some. And he's like, well, good thing I'm, like, built up a tolerance, right? So it's not going to knock him out. And then all of a sudden he's like, oh, I took some more other world viewing weed, because he sees Finn being carried away by the fairies. He's like, Josh, help me.
I love how he's just high all the time.
He's just constantly stoned. And Josh turns to the advisors and he takes the potion and says, Tick, tell my story. And then he vanishes.
So I genuinely extra. Love him. I would not want him to be in charge of anything, but I love him.
He'd be fun to have around.
Yeah.
He'd be just like make commentary on the sidelines with, you know, he can make the snacks.
He's a character. Yeah.
Yeah. So, all right, back on Earth, outside some random country barn, Katie and Julia cast the spell to create the storm to trick Reynard into thinking Persephone has arrived or
guys,
returned.
I think you're playing above your like pay grade again, but okay.
Yeah. They hide and suddenly he appears. He's like, where are you? I know you're here. You're a drama queen. And Julia's like, I can't get a good shot. And Katie's like, I'll get you a good shot. And she runs out to like draw Reynard out a little bit more.
No.
And he's like, oh, I should have known it was you, Katie. Where's Julia? And Katie's like, why don't you ask me where John is? I'm like, oh, that's right. Make the guy mad.
Also, Reynard seems smarter than this and would have been like, this stuff just happened. And now this is happening. This is definitely Julia and her hijinks. Yeah.
But, you know, saying this, you want to know what happened to your son? And his eyes go wide and Katie's like, he hated you so much, he begged me to kill him.
He's going to explode you, Katie.
I know. And Reynard's like, you bitch. And Julia like cocks that gun right behind him and he turns around and she's just ready to shoot. And then Katie and Reynard freeze.
You have to shoot. When you have the opportunity to shoot, you have to shoot.
Do it right then. Just do it.
Literally, that's every movie ever made. Don't stand there and be like, gotcha, bastard. Just shoot him in the time it takes you to say it.
Yeah. You can say this stuff when he's dying.
Exactly. Get the shot off.
Get that done. So yeah, all of a sudden, Katie and Reynard freeze, and the storm goes away, and color comes into the world. And Julia looks over to see Our Lady Underground standing in the barn. And we get a commercial break. But we come back, and Julia is understandably upset. She's mad. She's like, where the hell? You have ignored us this whole time and you show up now?
Have you been watching this shit? What's up?
And Persephone's like, Julia, you need to spare my son's life. Please. And she's like, what? You're what? Because we have been like,
he's murdered like 50 women that we know of this year.
Yeah. Julia's like, do you know what he's been doing this whole time? How he raped me and like all this crap he's been doing? And she's like, you did know. She realized she did know, and she goes, why shouldn't I kill him? And Persephone says, there are consequences to killing a Jod, Julia.
A Jod?
A Jod. A Jod, Julia.
Sorry, your face was so serious when you said it, too, but then you said
you heard
Jod.
It, you're like, I was trying to let it go, but you didn't. No. Yeah, there are consequences to killing a god, Julia.
Which does make sense. That is the better pitch.
Yeah.
Then, like,
maybe you should have led with
that. Spare him.
Okay. Yeah. And Julia says, I've already lost so much. And, like, Reynard's turned me into a monster. Mm-hmm. And Persephone's like, you're a survivor. Don't let Reynard rob you of that. You're capable of mercy.
Are you, bitch? Where have you been?
Where have you been this whole time? Like, and she's like, Julia, it's your choice. And so Julia thinks about it for like half a second and then puts the gun down. And Persephone goes over to Reynard and unfreezes him. And it's like, I am so disappointed in you over what you've done. And
I need Reynard, her to eat his face.
I know. It's kind of funny how he just like turns into this child. And he's like, you left me. You left me.
I really hate it. It feels so like facile. Like such just a simplistic like... He is like an epic villain.
Ripped apart.
Yes. He deserves it. He is not a sad little... He was not an abused little boy like somebody else that we know about.
No, he was just a spoiled brat. That's what he was. And so Persephone says, well, I'm back and it's time to go. And they just take off. Boop, they're gone. The world is grayscale again. Katie is unfrozen. And she's understandably pissed at Julia because they had been doing this whole thing,
Dude,
this whole
fucking
season.
Poor Katie just goes along for every ride and gets hung out to dry like every fucking time.
Ugh, it's exhausting for her. I feel so bad for her. She didn't even get the whole season either. She came in like three episodes in. Anyway, so Julia tells her like it was the right thing to do. Yeah, because you would get in trouble with the gods. That's why it was the right thing to do. And Katie leaves and Julia looks over and she sees her shade standing in the barn waiting for her. And the shade says, Our Lady sent me.
It's the least she could fucking do.
Yeah. She's in her room.
Thanks, Persephone, for doing something.
Finally. It's a good consolation, I guess.
Yeah.
So we go back to Breakbill South, and Quentin turns up in Alice's room. She's busy writing still, and he's like, he apologizes for hurting her, but he says, I'm not sorry that you're alive, because the world's a better place with you in it. And he says,
I mean, the rest of us are pretty like Matt on it, but okay.
Okay, but we're fine. Yeah. We didn't miss her that much. And I'll leave if you want me to. And she just scowls at him. And he tells her that she will be able to figure out everything that's going on. You're Alice Quinn, after all.
Stop.
And he leaves, and she goes back to writing. And later, Elliot and Quentin stand in front of the clock. And Elliot says, okay, so the plan is find a way to stay on Fillory. Stop Ember from fucking up more stuff. And Quentin's like, wait, you're talking about conquering Fillory? And Elliot's like, yeah, I guess. And he's like, that's like the same plan the Beast had.
But not the same intent.
No. He was more about domination.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Elliot realizes, oh, shit. What do we do? Do we have a better idea? End of episode.
Damn.
Dun, dun, dun.
So one thing I want to say about this episode that I think other episodes have not done as much because they like really feature our heroes. This one was a zoom out to like our heroes are ants to the gods and to all these various like power players and all these people who've been around for longer than them. Like,
it's slowly been doing that the whole season.
That's
slow
true.
Zoom out.
Yeah. But it really exposes like how weak and vulnerable and how like little power they each have.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's doing that to show us that when they all work together, they're more powerful. But I can't remember, so we'll see.
Kumbaya and all that. Woohoo!
Hakuna What'd you guys Matata. Think?
Hakuna Matata, I guess. Yeah. Well, maybe that won't fail you this time. All right, rewatchers, what did you think of the episode? Did you like it? Is it your first time watching? What do you think is going to happen if it was? Let us know. Give us some comments. Find us on Instagram at Dustin. Can't, no, crap, that's my other show. I'm keeping that in. Find us at The Rewatch Recap on Instagram and Threads. You can find Oraline at Spooky Oraline on Instagram. And you can find me on TikTok at Dustin_Holden. Come back and join us for the final season 2 episode next week, episode 13.
It's gonna be wild. Whatever happens, it's gonna be wild.
It's called We Have Brought You Little Cakes. Ooh.
Does anyone remember the season 1 finale title name? I'll just leave you to think about that.
Until next week, everyone. Bye, rewatchers.
Bye.